chin. My chin. Right. This is a part of this talk will be a paraphrasing of an excellent book by Paul N. Edwards on Cold War and computation, the impact of Cold War ideology on computation, and computer as a metaphor and ideology. And in this book, he really uses the metaphor of that was borrowed from Shakespearean theatre of a closed world versus a green world. And a closed world was a stage whereby none of the props or actors or actresses on that stage could leave that stage. Similarly, no new actors or actresses, props, stage sets or components thereof could enter that stage. It was a closed world. And compared to something of a green world stage, it was somehow fertile or flexible. There could be removals from that stage. There could be additions or amendments, alterations to that stage. And I'll talk a little bit about this in the context of this talk. In 1947, when the UK, citing a lack of funding, decided to pull out of supporting the anti-communist forces in Greece and in Turkey, Truman stepped in at the time. President Truman stepped in and said, "Well, I do think we need to make up for this gap, and so what we're going to do is to insist that that communism is fought hemispherically. In fact," he insisted that the world ought to be covered in a skin of sensors such that communism could be detected and squashed wherever it might appear. However, in order to do so, using the existing radar systems of the day, would have required hundreds, if not thousands, of different radar stations, each with a huge number of staff, in order to perform that particular function. And so investment was put into computers that could do that work. This, for instance, is the ANFSQ-7 used in the SAGE systems that were becoming a little bit more popular in the early 50s as a result of Truman and McNamara, the Secretary of Defense for a time, the effort in order to insist that there was a computational handling of this new emerging trigger network. And these SAGE systems, SAGE standing for the semi-automatic ground environment, could support up to 100 of these different individual consoles. It was the largest computer of its day. In fact, it's the largest computer that was ever built. They would reside in these buildings. Here is a SAGE building, a S-A-G-E building. It had four floors. The total surface area of the computers, one per floor, was 1.4 hectares. It was just a massive effort. I mean, it cost a billion or so a year to run this. Now, this was all very well. Coming along into the Vietnam War, there was, however, an opportunity to really start to explore this at another scale. And that problem began was solved at least initially by a big push from IBM to adopt its IBM 360. 65 machines, and these were huge machines too. Now, what Operation Igloo White was about, being the largest building in Southeast Asia at the time, it was based in Thailand, and the objective was to track North Vietnamese efforts to convey supplies to the Southern Vietnamese communist insurgents. And so they said that they lit up the Ho Chi Minh Trail like a drugstore pinball machine. The Ho Chi Minh Trail was a very, very difficult place to actually look after at that time from a surveillance perspective. They would put urine sensors, they would put footfall sensors, they would put sensors, they were just, all of which were disguised as sticks or rocks or whatever, some buried in the ground, also voice sensors. And all the way along that trail, whenever one of them was tricked, one of the sensors was triggered, planes would automatically be signaled from warning star systems that were other aircraft in the sky at the time. Planes would launch from runways, fly over the area, and just even the very bomb doors themselves would open up automatically, and fall to the ground. And the claim was that 35,000 individual vehicles were actually destroyed using this system. A later audit found that, in fact, that was more vehicles than were known to exist in all of northern Vietnam at the time. Nonetheless, there was a tremendous amount of interest in continuing this push further. The Vietnamese, however, it had turned out, being as clever as they are, had worked against the efforts of the invader by actually triggering footfalls, using even tape recorders with voice sensors to trigger the system, effectively fuzzing it. And taking advantage of it, planes would fly over and clear whole corridors of jungle for them so that they could quite freely move their supplies. It looked a little bit like this. This is the control center. You have these worms wiggling along these paths that would indicate where there had in fact been triggers. The sensors themselves were dropped into the ground like so. They were actually shot from planes or dropped from planes. And the seismic sensors themselves could be read up to a kilometer away. Now, going from circuit switching to packet switching, what do we mean by this? Well, these computers were, and their trigger systems were switched on a circuit level. While even being digital, it all happened in this space. So these were very much physical events within a traditional understanding of electromagnetic phenomena and electrical expressions. Going from that to packet switching, this was really what ARPANET came to represent. Of course, giving the bad seed of the modern internet as we know it. IPv4, the Internet Protocol version 4, was all about this ability to switch our way through routes. And in 2011, the internet officially ran out of numbers, with approximately 4.3 billion machines filling up the addressable space. But we can look at networks themselves very much, however, as enclosures. Closed worlds of their own. We have a LAN network and a WAN network. And if I just pull over to this display here, which is backgrounded by a little microscopic image, or at least to say magnified image of an Internet of Things board that I brought along with me, I can just, for instance, right now, just do an ARP scan of this network, and we can see all of the different machines sitting here on a public network to which I'm attached. It will take a bit of a while to go through them, but we'll see that in a second. Well, there are so many of them, it looks like. Here are, for instance, all of your iPhones and Samsung Galaxy phones, et cetera, iPads, bits and pieces. The MAC addresses there, these unique signifiers. This is an expression that's all happening within layer 2 of the network and within the confines of the LAN, not the wide area network, which we'll talk about a bit more now. Here we see these enclosures occurring, or expressed at least, within a more topological representation that we're more familiar with. We have these center point nodes, which are actually, in fact, routers connecting networks together. This is, I believe, a very large university network modeled by the Walrus system developed by CAIDA. We can look at pings, for instance, themselves as very much reconnaissance. Reconnaissance a little bit in the sense of moving out of the a present ground environment and into terrains outside of our existing environment. If I pop over here, and just join this network again, it would appear the network is absolutely flooded with people. Never mind. We'll let that do its work and I'll jump back to it. We can think of a ping packet a little bit like those trigger systems that were developed very much for the Vietnam War as part of this Operation Igloo White, as a means of reaching a domain outside of the given. The switch of a switching network has a physical representation like this. It is a kind of a dumb network device, but it's when we start looking at routers that we start to see a kind of a glue layer between domains, what we have is an opportunity for a local area, region, or enclosure to reach a wider network. Because a router, its only real sole purpose is to join two networks together. And here we see a very clear expression of that. This point here would be a router. A router connected to a switch, providing for all of these different devices, which couldn't very much be the phones in this room. Then we start to see enclosures in a physical expression, for instance, like this Utah data center. All of those racks inside there containing people's drunken tweets and Facebook walls will all be hiding behind a router. Unintended emissions. When we start seeing these enclosures expressing themselves not just in the landscape but very much in our pockets in the form of what one would think of as a black box, we start to wonder how much do we see of the inside and how much of the inside of us or sees us. And a Tempest system like this developed in the 60s and 70s especially, we almost begins to signal the end of a sensitivity to the outward and unintended expressions of our communication devices. We could see text read through the wall, through the emanations from a CRT monitor reconstructed. If you find that hard to understand, here's a handy cartoon to make it a little easier. With Wi-Fi 2.4 to 2.5 gigahertz domain, we have those hardware addresses that we could see over here, for instance, earlier with that aero dump. These unique identifiers that can very much be used to track us around town. GSM, it starts to get a bit more troubling when we see IMSI numbers, or these numbers hidden behind our phone number, that can be used to both catch us, track us around town, and as a monitoring interface. We see that with the Stingray system here. Black Lives Matter, etc., being very much troubled by this. The Women's March protests there were these sightings of these vehicles. And then we come to something like the Amazon Echo, which was quite appropriately put by a friend of mine, Zia. People in the 60s, I better not say that or the government will wiretap my house, but people today, hey, wiretap, do you have a recipe for pancakes? Could put it more appropriately. With the iPod, however, we see this enclosure really coming into its own. We see this field of metaphors, a thick skin of metaphors, in fact, none of whose outward expressions reveal anything about the inner functioning of that device. Almost no one you or I know could tell us precisely what all of those parts do. One might not know where the music is stored. Some might not even recognize the battery. But there are people that do recognize those things, that know very much about those, and those are the people, often very small and young hands in Asia and increasingly in Africa, that break open those enclosures, returning them again to the earth from which they came. Thank you.